Right.
The wardens or the volunteers. It was quite a time.
What about rationing, the availability
of
material?
That was, I think there was a lot of cheating on that, to tell you the truth. I think I did a little bit of it myself, swapping, you know, because you got A, B, and C, and D.
Wait a minute, you mean talking about coupons?
Yeah, the
coupons. Okay, A, B, C, and D,
yeah.
Coupons, and then how
and
do they work?
The A was general, you know, and then I think the C was for gasoline, and those were the ones you kind of try to trade so you'd have some, could get around, you know. And it was an interesting time.
It's interesting that rationing coupons became currency of a sort. People began to trade and barter them.
Yes. In fact, to pull up to a gas station, be prepared to hand them 50 stamps or whatever they charged, I forget.
That didn't buy your gasoline. You had to pay money in addition to it.
Yeah.
But that was only an entitlement, right,
yeah,
that you gave the coupon.
That you could get it.
Yeah, in other words, you didn't pay to get a certain number of coupons.
No. Well, you had to sign up for the, you know, maybe through your Social Security or something that you were able to get. They came in books.
Right.
You know, I don't know, maybe 10 pages of stamps. And you had to get, you know, applied for
right,
them.
In order to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So what'd you do for butter? This is always interesting.
Oh, yeah, that was the main thing. And we loved butter. My mother wouldn't use anything.
Expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Well, good evening. Welcome to tonight's edition of the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show on this beautiful evening here in Santa Cruz, California, just before sunset. We've got good news and bad news tonight. Our good news is that we are continuing our series on the War on Reason. And tonight's guest, first hour, Dr. Edwin Vieira, speaking on central banking in the New World Order. And the second hour, we'll be screening your child for mental health. How Congress and our state houses are dismantling the family, by Dr. Karen Ephraim. But unfortunately for our first hour, Dr. Vieira has had a family medical emergency just in the last several hours is not going to be able to be with us this evening. So we're going to do an in-studio interview with him and broadcast that in the near future. And in the interim, for this next hour, we're going to replay the second hour of last week's tremendous show with Dr. Michael Kaufman on Taking Liberty, the Abolishment of Private Property in America, showing how the American Wildlands Project is removing citizen control over the rural lands and natural resources of America. You want to hear this show, even if you heard it last week, because it's a remarkable demonstration of how political science sits behind the environmental scares, and how he explains the real motivation behind the attack on American forest owners, ranchers, and farmers. So we need to all come to understand how this and the other things that we'll be discussing in this series are intended to destroy the middle class and bring the loss of liberty to America. So you can look at the website, takingliberty.us, and listen forward on this next hour until we return live at 9 o'clock Pacific time for our interview with Dr. Karen Ephraim. Enjoy the show. Taken out of life. And at that point, your child becomes nothing but an agent of the state. He either conforms or he suffers. So it's a serious matter when we see our natural resources and rural lands being taken from the citizens of America by global NGOs, federal, state, and local governments. So, back with our very special guest, Dr. Michael Kaufman, extraordinary battler for freedom, an exceptionally courageous and intelligent resource manager. Michael, the thing that I really long for is the day I can have you out and look at the coastal oak forests, because there's some spectacular things happening here on the Central Coast, and your brilliance when it comes to land management issues and techniques and your vast experience with America's major kinds of forest lands would just be fascinating for me to draw from your wonderful depth of knowledge.
We're going to have to do that one of these days, Michael, because I do like that area. Definitely like it.
Well, the Central Coast of California is a special place, and that's why our congressman Sam Farr is so vested with congressional authority to throw all kinds of money in here to the Central Coast in order to move these sustainable development programs along. And in fact, his commitment to this world program is pretty clear. He flies the flag of the United Nations right outside his congressional office. The only man ever to do so in history. We're going to be right back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio station. Stay tuned. We're back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio station with Dr. Michael Kaufman. And for those who've just joined in, give us a quick overview of Taking Liberty, and then let's just move on with the subjects that flow from there, including the Endangered Species Act and maybe a little bit on global warming.
Well, the Taking Liberty program brings everyone up to date as to what's happened over the last 12 years since we stopped the biodiversity treaty. It explains what the program is designed to do, how it got started, why we have it even today, and then go into it region by region, what the federal government is doing in what we call the gap analysis. You've probably never heard of it, but let me tell you, folks, it's in your backyard. You just don't know it yet. And
the gap analysis?
Gap analysis program is a gee whiz program, basically based in what they call geographic information system technology. And it is designed basically to look at three layers of information. One is land ownership, who owns what where, the species distribution, both animals and plants, and the land cover type, the type of structure. We were just talking about the mid-coast oak type. That's one of the land cover types. And you overlay those types of things, find out what is protected, in other words, either totally protected in the form of a wilderness area, or at least partially protected in the form of a national park or a state park or something like that, and then determine what needs to be taken
so that
they can protect more.
You mean stolen,
land.
You do not? Is that what you mean?
What's that?
You mean confiscated, stolen,
confiscated,
taken.
Yes, that's probably a more accurate term, in order to take and protect more land. And it's happening. One of the examples is in Florida, and we go through Florida in detail on Taking Liberty and show exactly how it's happening. It is mind-boggling. What they have done, they've actually expanded in the state of Florida the amount of land owned by the state and the federal government by 11% in 15 years.
Wow.
11%. They've gone from 29% to over 40% land ownership by the state of Florida and the federal government. in order to accomplish. And what they're looking for is somewhere in excess of 60% of the state of Florida to be put into these interconnecting reserves and corridors, or as they call them, hubs and linkages, in which mankind will not be able to do anything. And they're well on their way. In the western United States, with so much federal land that's available, you know, over 50%, California, 48% of your land is in federal ownership.
Hold that thought for just a moment, Michael. We're coming to a break here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio. Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show with Dr. Michael Kaufman, who is explaining the gobbling up by federal and state agencies of America's landscape. Now, you say that Florida has increased its government ownership by 11% in the last few years, but that's not including all the nature conservancy acquisitions that come in hat in hand with government regulation, knocking down the price and making, quote, willing sellers out of
it. You know, that's a very, and I make this point, and they actually brag about it in Florida, how much under budget they actually are. They're ahead of schedule. They hope to have somewhere around 35% ownership by 2005, this year. They're at over 40%. That's how fast they're moving.
And
it's under budget.
In California, it's at 48%. And the other thing that this isn't considering is all the landowners out there who have had their life being miserable, and then the man with a smile and a handshake and some cash in his pocket who says, I'm from the federal government or I'm from the Nature Conservancy, says, if you'll sign this document here, giving up future control and management, effectively eliminating the private property nature of the parcel so encumbered, you know, tremendous amounts of land. We've had several shows on conservation easements have been gobbled up that way. So it's not always an ownership. It's a variety of ways that the New World Order people are using to design on the innocent American citizen out there trying to make a living on his land, and this land ends up in the coffers of a very narrow international elite.
Yes, right. Yeah, maybe not even trying to make a living, but just living on their land, using their land. All of a sudden they find they cannot even use their land for what they want to use it for. And it's not because there is a danger, there's a health danger or something like that in the use of their land. Everybody else gets to use their land that way. They just can't because for some reason someone has drawn something on the map that shows that they need to protect that attribute on your land, and therefore you're no longer able to do it. Simple as that. And then you don't get any just compensation for it.
One of the things I really enjoyed in watching Taking Liberty is that you've got a whole list of terms and projects and programs that you warn people about. And, of course, they're just like sustainable development itself. They're all warm and fuzzy terms. You know, if we called it, you know, stealing America's land so the next generation of Americans can be subject to world domination, you know, nobody go for it. But when they call it sustainable development, or they call it community planning, people seem to fall prey to these alluring words that have nothing but poison underneath.
That's right. Unfortunately, you're absolutely right. And until we can begin to, and this is what Taking Liberty is designed to do, it's designed not only to inform you, who are already pretty well informed, but to inform your government officials in some capacity or another who are just innocently going along with this because it sounds so warm and fuzzy, can get help get them reelected, whatever the case is, and all of a sudden they can see the big picture and how they're being used. And this was never ceases to amaze me, Michael, is that most of these environmentalists in the rank and file, they're doing it for what they believe is the right reason, but they're being used by this international cartel. It's being used as useful idiots, as Stalin used to say, to advance their agenda, and they have no idea that they are basically destroying the United States in the process.
Well, in that process, the way they organize themselves is really with what Al Gore said, we're going to reinvent government. Well, government has been reinvented. It's a Soviet-styled system of tiered councils that operate by predetermined outcome. That is, we will implement the Wildlands Project. We'll use democracy when that serves our interests. We'll use regulation when that serves our interests. We'll use, you know, beguilement when that serves our interests. And we will buy up, you know, the people doing it don't understand who they're buying it up for, but we will buy up all of America. We will gather up all of the resources. We'll blur the boundaries. We'll raid the treasury.
And we'll own all the treasures of all the people, and we'll own their lives. And that's what's really behind this. It's a, you know, Dr. Stan on his radio show often says this is a spiritual battle. And when you boil it right down, it is about taking control over human beings, and that is a timeless spiritual battle. And the remarkable thing is that for Americans who still live in relative luxury, the reality is that we're only a generation away, and maybe even less this time. And the problem too is that the resources, the science, and the monitoring capability is total. So if they've got the natural resources, the ability to monitor and control becomes unlimited.
Yes, it does. And that is something that deserves a whole hour of discussion in itself. One of the things that we discuss in Taking Liberty is the Endangered Species Act, because it is up for reauthorization this year. And most people do not realize that the Endangered Species Act has not saved a single species. Not, now, you won't hear that out of the Department of Interior. They'll claim that they've saved a dozen or so. But if you look back and you find out there's been, 20 or so species taken off the endangered species list. However, most of those were entered on the list on with false information to start with.
So they were never endangered.
They should have never been on the list.
Okay.
There's about 9 of them that the federal government will claim have been recovered, like the bald eagle. But in almost every case, it was something else that helped in the recovery, not the Endangered Species Act. Because the Endangered Species Act, if you go back and you look at the background of the Endangered Species Act, it was never designed to save species. It was designed to control people. Period. And that's exactly how it's been used over the 30 years that it's been in existence. Because the Endangered Species Act, you cannot, and this is in our Taking Liberty program, you cannot protect habitat. You cannot maintain habitat by keeping a hands-off effort like they're demanding that we do. You cannot manage your land. You cannot do anything on your land because you've got to save it for this species that's supposed to be endangered. The problem is Mother Nature will change that habitat over a period of 10 to 20 years, whether you try to keep it that way or not, period. There is no way it's going to change it. It happens, it's called natural succession, and it's going to happen, and within 10 to 20 years, the habitat that once supported that particular species is going to be gone naturally. And as a consequence, the only way that you can maintain habitat is to create it through management. And if you're going to create it through management, you might as well also benefit. If you're in a forest, to harvest trees, and therefore get some benefit out of it at the same time, because you're going to change that. You're going to change that habitat one way or the other, and mankind might as well also benefit from it. And in fact, that's the only way that you can maintain a certain percentage of the landscape in a habitat that's suitable for an endangered species. You cannot protect it. It just cannot be protected. I don't care who would argue with me. You cannot protect habitat.
Well, it's like trying to restore nature. You cannot restore something to a continuing changing process. It's like making your 14-year-old 2 years old again.
Exactly. That's a good analogy. I'll have to remember that. You just cannot go back to what it used to be. And you don't want to go back to what it used to be. There's no reason to go back to what it used to be.
Well, you know,
I get a big kick out of this effort to protect the condor in your particular area, California. They're actually doing things that is going to ensure the extinction of the condor because they're trying to protect habitat, and you can't protect it. It's growing up, and it's becoming less and less suitable for the condor. And the only way that you're going to be able to protect or to save that species is to go in there and manage those lands.
Well, that's why I say I have a real affinity for the coastal oak forest, because they're very dynamic if they are disturbed. If you don't disturb them, it turns into 40-foot walls of poison oak and bramble.
Yes.
And totally impenetrable to any mammal. And the only thing that really do well in there are the rats. But if you manage it, you can turn an area with maybe 5 species of plants into an area of 150 species of plants, some of which come up only when disturbance happens. See, it takes the disturbance to bring up the plants that are unusual and rare. And if you have different stages of development moving along as you manage your land, you have all kinds of different insects and animals attracted because you've got different kinds of food bases.
You know, it's very interesting. I've done a lot of work out west. In fact, I used to live out west. And you can go down fence lines where they put a fence in. On one side is the Nature Conservancy. On the other side is a ranch that grazes cattle and that sort of thing. Now, what do you suppose has the healthier ecosystem?
The one with the disturbance.
The one with the disturbance. The one of the Nature Conservancy is a biological desert. Because exactly what you just described.
Yeah. You know, we can go to the new federal preserves around our towns here. There's one in La Selva Beach where they took a poor farmer's land and put a fence around it, put up signs that says, do not enter. You know, it's a weed trap ready to burn, but they said there's a salamander in there somewhere. And so, you know, while the taxpayer pays to give this land over to the Wildlands Project, you know, the property's ready to burn, but supposedly there's one happy salamander that's not being stepped on that's living the life of luxury.
But eventually... you know, I don't know what the habitat of that salamander might be, but eventually the habitat's probably going to disappear because the farmer was creating the habitat for it.
Well, sure. You know, that's you've got conditions around Santa Cruz now where somebody has made a water dynamic, and then the ugly rules and habitat conservation plans begin to sit down upon them, and the planning department combines with the federal United States Department of Agriculture, the Federal Department of Interior, and starts to squeeze down some individual landowner until he becomes a willing seller to the Nature Conservancy. It's happening here all the time. It's happening all around the country. And Michael, we've had so many guests on our show from every part of this country repeating the same story again and again.
I know of a farmer up in the state of Oregon whose land extends across the mountain, and basically the top of that mountain was shut off. It was owned by the U.S. Forest Service, and basically his cattle were excluded from that. And within 10 years after the exclusion of the cattle, the forest grew up, the pasture, the grasslands disappeared, and ironically, the streams that were coming off of that, who once were teeming with trout and other types of fish and so forth, all of a sudden became sterile. Why? Because it was protected.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of research coming from citizen forest owners in this county about the amount of water that a redwood, too many redwoods up in our forest ready to burn, but they're also sucking up all the water out of the streams, and the people down by the ocean in the towns are saying, well, there's not enough water in the creeks. Well, it's because the trees are growing too thick, and it's the trees that are taking the water out of the course.
Trees are beautiful, but they do use water. They use a lot of water.
Well, too many trees isn't beautiful. You get nothing growing on the ground. You get a canopy that is not shared by healthy trees. Fewer trees make better trees.
That's right. And you get more vegetation on the ground, more wildlife, because you have more habitat and food and all the rest that goes along with it. And the only way you can create that is through forest management.
Well, through
or through fire. Now, which would you rather have?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, when you've had a scheme of management that's gone on in this country for 100 years, and then beginning 10 years ago, through regulation, you were forced to stop, as was the case in Southern California, thanks to the Center for Biological Diversity and other organizations like that that filed hundreds of lawsuits keeping people from being able to manage their forests in Southern California. And last year, or a year and a half ago, came that massive, massive wildfire that burned so hot because there was so much fuel that people died, homes were ruined, and this is part of the plan
of
the Wildlands Project.
And you ask most of these people who advocate locking this land up, and they still will not believe that it's their policy that created this nightmare. It just couldn't be, because they know better. They know that they want to protect Mother Nature, and Mother Nature would respond under their gentle care. Well, Mother Nature is harsh and cruel, and you let it go naturally. You remember, Lewis and Clark crossed the Rocky Mountains, the Selway Bitterroots, and they almost starved to death. Why? Because they had ancient forests. There's nothing down underneath there to provide food for elk and deer and so forth, and they almost starved.
Well,
ancient forests are really not desirable whatsoever.
You know, man is either put on this earth for, amongst other things, to steward and sponsor the earth, or he was put on earth to be the tool of other men.
Yes.
And that's the difference between sustainable development and America's tradition of individual liberty. And again, our presidents have consistently made their choice. Our Congress has consistently made its choice, and not the choice of the people, not the choice of liberty, but instead the choice of a global collective. You know, people say, well, why haven't I heard about this? There's a quote I've been given that helps us understand this. This is a quote from David Rockefeller, given in Germany in the year 1991 at some meeting. Quote, "We're grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other great publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected their promise of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subjugated to the lights of publicity during those years. But the world is now more sophisticated and prepared to march towards a world government, the supernatural national sovereignty of an intellectual elite and world bankers is surely preferable to the national autodetermination practiced in past centuries." Well, I don't patronize the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, CNN, or Fox News, because Rockefeller is saying it as it is, and for the audience who hasn't heard some of our shows, Joan Vion or Joan Peros, talk about the Earth Charter and the Rockefeller involvement in the Earth Charter, what the Earth Charter is, how it's invaded our schools, and how it's invaded our mayors, our council of mayors. You know, the Earth Charter typifies this attitude by David Rockefeller. The Earth Charter was written by Mikhail Gorbachev and Stephen Rockefeller. But we are subjecting ourselves to a global elite who hands out their candy, their poison in the shape of candy, and it is leading America down the wrong path. So one by one, we just need to start figuring this out and moving forward.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And the Endangered Species Act, for what your responsibility is when you get the opportunity to tell your senators and congressmen to vote, if we have the option, vote it out, but at least vote it in a way that becomes an incentives program, not a punitive program. Whenever you've tried to use incentives to help the landowner to manage for an endangered species, to provide benefits to that landowner, it works. When you punish a landowner, it never works.
Well, Michael, I agree about the punish part, but you know, when it comes to the incentive part, I don't necessarily agree with that. A landowner does not need incentive coming from his government to do anything. You know, the reality is that a landowner's interests is best served by looking at the long-term viability of this property, and landowners know that. That's why landowners manage for societal needs. If it's food, then it's going to be put to food. If it's recreation, it'll be put to healthy recreation. If it is housing, it'll be put to increasingly imaginative system of housing, if we're free to do it. You know, there's every reason to suggest that well-managed property requires the existence of people. So we should be spreading ourselves out, not cramping ourselves into cities, but spreading ourselves out where we can live and live in a way where we're able to create all kinds of alternatives. For instance, living in lands that are well managed, where it doesn't mean that you have to manage your land to a standard, but there'll be more and more people desiring to, because people will want to live in well-managed natural lands.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. The reason I said what I said was because trying to eliminate the Endangered Species Act entirely is almost a political no-no. It's almost a political impossibility. Given that, the next best thing is an incentives program rather than a punishment program or a punitive program. But I agree with you. Given a total free market situation, what you do then is the every landowner will manage their land as to the best interest of society as a whole. And it's been shown to happen time after time after time.
Well, the problem I have with incentives to landowners is that the look I've had at Congressman Pombo, he's just a couple districts away from here, at Congressman Pombo's reauthorization of the Endangered Species Act does two things. One, it throws some incentives, quote, some subsidies off to some landowners, but in exchange for that, what the act really does is it establishes the premise that all species are of equal value.
Yeah,
it goes
true.
Further than what 1973's Endangered Species Act goes. It actually cements the concept of the paganism that you talked about in the last hour.
That is very true. I would agree with you on that wholeheartedly.
And so if you are a natural constituent of Congressman Pombo, let him know that you don't want to see it reauthorized. Leave the mess as it is now, because Americans are starting to figure out this Endangered Species Act is wrong-headed. Don't go and reauthorize it for another 30 years on a basis that is even worse, having bought off some interest with some subsidy. That just is the wrong way for Americans to approach this. It could be, it would be a heavyweight nail if this Endangered Species Act were reauthorized on the basis that it's being discussed at current times.
I would agree with that.
Well, there's some new activity in the global warming dynamic. We had Tom DeWeese last week talking about the environmental Earth Day or something up in San Francisco this last week.
Mm-hmm.
And Governor Schwarzenegger was there and said that his plan calls for reducing the state's emissions of greenhouse gases to 2000 levels by the year 2010, to reduce it to 1990 levels by the year 2020. And reduce it, get ready for this, this is called the return of the primitive, reduce it to 80% below 1990 levels by 2050. Either they don't expect there to be many people living in California, or they expect us to be living very primitively, I suspect.
You know, I can't understand that statement unless he just said it for politics, because he knows he'll be long dead by that time, and he won't have to worry about what he said today, because it is literally impossible to do what he is claiming to do. Unless we develop a brand new source of energy that we know nothing about right now,
and that's all
coal fusion or something like that, because as long as we have to use fossil fuels, it's not going to be possible. Period.
Let's talk about global warming. You know, that also arose out of the Agenda 21 Rio Accords in 1992, didn't it?
Yes, it did. And for 10 years, I was the head of a multi-million-dollar research effort on global warming and acid rain. For the entire United States, and basically what we found, you know, in principle, yeah, it could have happened, you know, and for a number of years we were scratching our heads, is this really happening or not happening? Well, we now have way more than enough information to realize that it's not happening the way the United Nations and the U.S. State Department and the EPA say it's happening.
And the way academia says it happens.
Pardon?
In academia, I mean, the kids come out of school, colleges today, I mean, you know, it's like treason to say that there's not global warming.
You know, that's very true. It's become the standard, it's a commonly accepted fact now that global warming, man-caused global warming. There is global warming, by the way, just in case, don't get tripped up on the fact and saying there is no global warming, because there is. The question is, where is it coming from? And there is all kinds of evidence to really demonstrate now that the warming that we've experienced over the last 100 years is a natural warming that is occurring from what is called the Little Ice Age that occurred in the 17th and 18th centuries. So what we're doing is we're having a natural warming. It was actually warmer than it is right now back in 1200. That's what they call the medieval optimum, and it was much warmer then than it is even right now. So what we're seeing here is a natural recovery from a little ice age, what they call the little ice age, back in 1700, 1800, in that period. In fact, it was so warm back in 1200 that the Vikings actually colonized Greenland, had quite a few communities there. They're growing crops in Greenland now where there's 100 feet of ice. So it was much warmer then than it is even right now. And it's nothing but a natural cyclic phenomenon that we're going to see over the next eons, that Earth warms and it cools. And it's primarily controlled by the amount of energy emitted by the sun. And the sun goes through an 11-year cycle, a 60-year cycle, a 120-year cycle in its energy output. The more sunspots you see on the sun, which we did go through in the 1990s, the more solar eruptions occur and the more solar flares that occur. And if you have one of those solar flares pointed at the Earth when it goes off, what it does is it sends out a huge wave of ions and so forth that interact with the ionosphere of the Earth in a way that changes the jet stream and generally will make it much warmer. And ironically, when we had the greatest amount of eruptions on the sun was in the late 1990s, 1998 and so forth, when we had a major spike in the Earth's temperature, and when we also saw a major El Nino off in the Pacific. Both were related directly to the number of solar flares that were occurring that were happened to be pointed right at the Earth when they went off. And it is shown very conclusively what for a long time the atmospheric physicists could not figure out, even as gigantic as this influx of ions from the sun is, it's still relatively minor compared to the total amount of energy reaching the Earth from the sun, and they couldn't see how it could influence the Earth's temperature that much. Now that they realize it influences the ionosphere, which is the source of the jet stream, all of a sudden things begin to make a lot more sense. And what we're seeing here is, again, a natural cycle. Now, given the politics of the situation and the fact that everybody is absolutely convinced now that we have man-caused global warming, even though the vast majority of scientists, you'll hear that the consensus of the scientists is that we're having it, that's not true. It's absolutely a bald-faced lie. The majority of the scientific community do not believe that we're having man-caused global warming. There is a small cadre of scientists that are working on the global warming issue. In fact, their jobs depend on the global warming issue. They're being paid billions of dollars. And if they suddenly come up and say that there is not a global warming, man-caused global warming, they're going to be out of a job. They have a vested interest to keep this myth going.
The sustainable mercenaries, as they call them.
Sustainable mercenaries, that's right. Science has become politicized, just accepted as a reality. And President Bush, when he took office back in 2001, he came out and said that the United States is not going to participate in the Kyoto Protocol. Why? Because the Kyoto Protocol was not designed to stop global warming or even to help the global warming issue, even if it were occurring. It's designed to control you and I. It's designed as a massive income redistribution system from the first world nations to the third world nations. It has nothing to do with helping in the global warming issue. And what the solution is with the Kyoto Protocol is that because we are polluting so much, we have to buy pollution credits from the third world nation. And so we have to give them billions and billions and billions of dollars to be able to keep GM going in Detroit and other places around the United States. To keep our manufacturing centers going, we have to pay these countries. It's nothing more than extortion.
Well, and this was the whole reason Enron was set up, was it not?
To
trade those credits.
And so when
the treaty fell apart, so did Enron.
Right. Well, they were exposed. They went too far with the crisis there in California, which was basically created by the Sierra Club, but that's a whole other issue. So we won't get into that. But the key problem is that the Kyoto Protocol never was designed to help global warming. Now, I will give credit to President Bush and his people. They have come up with what is called the Methane to Markets Initiative. I don't totally agree with it, but listen to this. The Kyoto Protocol, at best, after 100 years of effort, might control global warming by 0.015 degrees, might lower it by that much. That's all. Even the United Nations admits that. And yet it would cost the United States citizens hundreds and hundreds and billions of dollars over a 10-year period. Trillions of dollars over a longer period.
Well, and really a changed lifestyle. It's not just the dollars that go out for that, because what global warming is going to be used as the excuse for is the green building standards, which drive up the cost of,
absolutely,
of everything, and the whole smart growth dynamic, which is driving up the price of homes, so that we create that two-caste system and so that we eliminate the middle class. So, you know, the whole global warming scam, if you will, all of the environmental scares, the state of fear, as Michael Crichton called it so aptly, is all about fronting for this new system of government, this new system of justice. The environment is merely the tool to obtain it. So Americans need to look at that new system of government, where it's going to lead us, look at that new system of economics called public-private partnerships that's to the exclusion of free enterprise, and what that means for your businesses and what that means for your children to grow up into in a world where we're no longer a representative democracy, we're no longer a democratic, small d, republic, capital R, with a limited government. We become a part of a global democracy where you get to vote based upon how well you're manipulated on the issues they decide they want you to vote on, just to confirm what it is they're doing anyway. And in the meantime, the legislators and the judges sit around and determine what law they want to issue as an edict without anything balancing or controlling their power. It is about controlling human beings. It's about making your children an agent of the state.
That's very, very true. Couldn't be said better. But listen to what Bush's program does, this methane to market. It doesn't go far enough, but yet it is a treaty that was just signed in the last couple of months by the United States, Great Britain, Korea, and several other nations around the world. And what it will do, now remember that the Kyoto Protocol is not designed to reduce emissions whatsoever. It's designed to try to control carbon dioxide emissions. Carbon dioxide emissions is absolutely critical for plant growth. In fact, I'll talk about that in a moment. They want to reduce the very thing that helps plant to grow. At the same time, Bush's methane, or the methane concept, will go to reducing the methane problem. The methane problem as a greenhouse gas is 20 to 30 times more potent as a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. So it doesn't take as much reduction to have a big bang. And what they can do with this new treaty over the next few years is basically take the equivalent of 33 million cars off the road, eliminating 50 coal-fired electric plants. Or you're talking earlier about Tony Blair saying that they had to eliminate 3.2 million homes in Great Britain in order to meet their goals. Well, this one program by itself, they're going to only reduce it by 1%. And if they reduce the methane emissions by 1%, they would be equivalent to warming 7.2 million homes, and at a cost of a little over $50 million.
Simple solutions to complex problems.
Yes. So, so true. And you know what the response is by the environmental community?
Well, it doesn't serve the interests of the Wildlands Project, so they can't be for it.
They cannot be for it. That's right. They're basically downplaying it, saying it won't work, and so forth, because they want to use greenhouse gases, because that'll get them more bang for the buck if they can get more cars off the road, contribute to more smart growth, and all the rest that they want to do.
Well,
they're hypocrites. In fact, they are the greatest destroyers of the environment and the United States American system that this country's ever known. Simple as that.
I think you're right, and of course many people are innocent to the purpose behind this. Not all people are innocent, but some people are innocent, and you know, I like to think they're so open-minded that the marbles have kind of dropped down and are rolling on the ground. They need to bend over, pick those marbles up, and start to think about the consequences of destroying private property, how private property and its destruction will destroy our liberty and destroy our life. You know, Michael, you're going to be at the Freedom 21 conference next month.
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about your participation in the Freedom 21 conferences in the past and what this
one. Freedom 21 conferences started way back about 10 years ago at Kansas City. And they weren't called Freedom 21 at that time. They were, I can't even remember what we called them at that time. But the fact is that they have grown and grown. And it's been one of the primary mechanisms, as I look back over the last 10 years, as to what those, and there's only been attendance of 100 to 200 people. Last year there was about 300 that took this information home and made changes, and has literally stopped this agenda, or slowed it down. I shouldn't say stopped. It's not stopped. But it slowed this agenda down, because you're seeing the key, you're hearing the key people from around the country, in some cases around the world, that can explain to you what is happening and what you can do about it. And the last program that we had in Reno last year was dynamite, and the lineup of speakers that they have this year is, I think, going to be equally as important. I'm going to be speaking twice, once on the financial imperialism of the world, what the international corporations and the United Nations is doing to basically hold these third world nations into poverty, even when they're claiming that they're getting them out of poverty. The fact is that their mechanisms and so forth are designed to keep them into poverty in perpetuity, and put us into poverty in the same way over the next two decades. And the other thing I'm going to be doing is explaining this Taking Liberty program a little bit more over a two-day period.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. You know, for the listening audience, there will be Joan Vionne, who's been a guest on this show, will talk about how global governance is advancing. I mean, behind this whole environmental movement, again, is this global governance concept. And so there's a lot to understand to that. Niger Innes, spokesman for the Congress of Racial Equality, will be speaking on the anti-freedom policies that are affecting the poorest people in the United States and the developing world. And you know, that's what this is, where this whole sustainable development dynamic is going, is it will create poverty. You know, I look at this idea of Great Britain going into Africa to end poverty, and see how they're working so hard on this global basis to eliminate America's middle class, and I have to wonder what kind of mechanism they'll use to end poverty in Africa.
They can't.
Well, they
can't. Mechanism that they're using will not end poverty. The only thing that will end poverty is private property rights.
Well, or death.
Or death. That's correct. Yeah, you got a point. You got me there.
Okay. Dr. Fred Singer is going to be at the conference talking on global warming. Jim Beers will be there talking about the Invasive Species Act. Tom DeWeese, boy, it's just a whole lineup of great talks. And Madeline Cosman will be there. So if you've got a chance to make it in Reno, I would suggest to the audience, get your reservation. You can go to freedom21.org, Henry Lamb, and find out more information and make reservations.
Yeah, it should be a very good, if it's anywhere close to what it was last year, it'll be the most impressive program that you've ever seen.
Well, and it is making increasing ripple effects across the country, because there's email lists that are growing every day with information spreading, and with tools like Taking Liberty or tools like the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Guide, the Guide to Understanding Sustainable Development.
Yes, excellent.
You know, we're now in our second printing, Michael, and the pace of the sale of this just keeps accelerating.
What excites me about that particular program is that, you know, it's designed for Americans, because we use American American examples in it, but yet other nations are picking it up and running with it because it affects them the same way, even though they don't have the same governmental structure.
Well, this guide is moving through England right now very rapidly, and if one person comes to understand this dynamic, the osmosis multiplies it many times over, because family and neighbors and associates begin to catch on with every person who sees the picture of sustainable development, is able to communicate in little but meaningful ways to people around them, so that's how this is going to spread. And when we all get the information about what's really happening, boy, the American know-how will put itself to work and figure out a way to make right and to launch us back onto our real vision of individual liberty and equal justice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. it's exciting to see what is happening. What was exciting to me when I was in South Africa in 2002, we stopped basically the acceptance by the United Nations of the Earth Charter. And it wasn't me and Henry Lamb and Tom McDonald like we did with the Biodiversity Treaty that did it. There was over 100 people from all over the world that was fighting that thing. They understood it. It was exciting to see. I had very little to do with it this time around, but yet I was there to see it happen. And it was exciting to see so many people coming together, because now it's becoming more and more widespread all across the world what these people are trying to do. And people are coming from everywhere to try to stop it. And you can be part of that.
Well, you know, any citizen, you know, the evil prevails when good men do nothing. So there's a lot of people in America who are not listening to this show tonight, but they can listen to it later on. And what we need to do is just start methodically spreading the information. We don't have a lot of time. We need not panic, but we need to start getting busy.
Yes.
You know, and one of the steps I always like to suggest to people is that they take control of their children's development. Because our school system is, and it's moving real fast, it's happening very quickly in our school system, the change in focus, the change in purpose, all things seem to be changing. Even our fire policy here in Santa Cruz, we now have the International Fire Code that puts life, not human life, just life, meaning any species life, number one, and the defense of property, number three, behind defense of the environment. So that's a complete restructure of the traditional American notion about how you fight fires, which is to protect human life and property as
right.
Number one, number two objective. So it's happening in so many ways. It happens at all the little boards, the water boards and the fire boards and the school boards. And the first thing you can do is save your child, protect your child from that kind of influence that will leave them willing and compliant citizens to a new world order.
I agree. And you think back a couple of years ago when we had the massive fires in the state of Washington. There is a classic example of what happens when you have this muddled mental thinking of nature comes first, where you had the Forest Service spending hours and hours arguing over whether they should be dropping slurry over five firefighters to protect them from a fire that was completely surrounded them and was approaching on them. And finally the firemen burned up because they were arguing over whether they should use slurry, because slurry could get into the creeks and hurt the endangered cutthroat. One of the endangered trout. And it just astonishes me. But there's a classic example of what happens when you put species first. It is a classic example. I was on a fire in Montana 4 years ago, in which started, and it was a couple acres in size, but they pulled all the firefighters off that night because it's dangerous out there at night, you know? I used to fight fire at night all the time. Yeah, it is dangerous, but you have to do it because that's when you can succeed on a fire. You have to take the risk because that's when you can beat the fire back. And they put them out at 10 o'clock the next morning. By that time, it was about 500 or 600 acres. And in 2 days, it had burned 50 million acres.
My.
It just, not 50 million, I'm sorry, got a floating decimal point. It's 1 o'clock my time. 50,000 acres. Just, we drove for 50 miles where it had run, it had paralleled one of the highways there. And we drove for 50 miles. And if they had fought it the way it should have been fought, was using slurry, but they couldn't use slurry because it might hurt this little trout. Of course, the trout streams have all dried up. Trout were dead anyway. The streams evaporated or boiled, as the case might be. They were dead one way or the other. And so by worrying about this, they lost tens and tens of thousands of acres of forests and streams and everything else.
You know what I've observed from the quote environmental scientists that I run into here in California, particularly in Santa Cruz, is that most of them, you know, and I was raised in a city and only bought rural land as a, you know, 20 years ago, but it's very clear to me that many of them really have no idea what they're doing.
No, they don't. It's all feel good.
Yeah, they have no sense about how it's like a child. If you know nothing about a child, you can't nurture the child. Well, these folks don't know how to nurture the land and can't recognize when land is being nurtured.
No.
It's an agenda. You know,
they have a frozen idea in their minds that the only way that you can nurture land is by protecting it and keeping people off. And that's usually the worst thing you can do.
That's why we say that sustainable development is anti-human, it's anti-life, and it's anti-property.
Yes, it is.
You know, for our listeners, we talked in the last hour, and we'll have to do that again, how it is you can order your copy of Taking Liberty so that you can hand it out to university professors or lawyers or next-door neighbors or family members, etc. You know, it's something that would make a great summertime Christmas present, whether you live in the rural or urban area. But for our regular listeners who want to help distribute Taking Liberty, you can fund a distribution of Taking Liberty by Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. Just call us or send your check to Post Office Box 3330, Freedom, California. That's Box 3330, Freedom, California, 95019. You know, the real question is, do you want to see private property in America abolished by continuing the federal implementation of a political globalist plan called sustainable development? If not, don't sit back and do nothing. Just watch and circulate Taking Liberty. Because one of the big goals that I have, one of the big hopes I have, is that Taking Liberty steadily spreads around this country and people begin to see the light. You know, I always say, Michael, it's like managing native grasses here on the central coast of California. You know, you fight the European pasture grasses for a decade. Every year you're trying to beat back that seed bank, and then suddenly something pops up that hadn't been there before, and you get identified. It's a indigenous California plant, and it goes along for a few years, and finally it goes like wildfire. It just catches on. It spreads over a particular area, and then other things start to grow up under it that are all luscious and luxurious as the California landscape would be. And that's how freedom's going to move. And the way it's going to move is by examples like Taking Liberty being spread around this country. So gather unto yourself and make an investment. Contact Michael Kaufman or Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. You can reach us at 831-684-2232. And how can they contact you, Michael, to get...
Again, if you're interested in Freedom 21, 1-800-799-9878 from 8 o'clock to about 5 o'clock Eastern Time. Or give us a call at 207-945-9878 if you have some questions, because this is a huge program, and the more we can spread it, I think the more effective that we can be. And what Michael's doing with Freedom 21 in Santa Fe, or Santa Cruz, with their sustainable development pamphlet and so forth, is yet another tool to help people understand what is happening.
Yeah, it's a big behemoth, you know, with millions of pages coming out from Switzerland and New York and Washington, D.C., you know, and to get it down to where the average citizen can digest it has been a challenge, and nobody's worked at that longer and harder than you have. I mean, I suppose there's a few guys like Henry Lamb, etc. You know, I'm a Johnny come lately to this dynamic. We've been working on it here for about 4 years, but it has taken this much time for people to be able to really digest a massively comprehensive, brilliantly strategized, I mean, if you think the devil can be brilliant, program for taking freedom, taking liberty in America. And it starts out in our rural lands, because once they've got the rural lands and natural resources, it's easy to be to subjugate the people.
Yes, it is. Very definitely. Well, I think we've had a good program here tonight, Michael, and hopefully many of you who are in the listening audience will take advantage of it. Spread, you know, take the program and give it to others. You sell the CDs, don't you, Michael?
The Taking Liberty CDs?
No, these 2 hours of...
Yes, we do. We will be making archives of this, and we will be making CDs of it, so you can call our number. Again, that's 831-684-2232. And you can order a single copy or multiple copies of the guide, and you can look at our radio archive and decide what radio shows you want to hear. And I'm so happy to have had you on this first session of what we're calling the War on Reason. And in this case, it's the circumstance of abolishing private property through the Wildlands Project and the Smart Growth land use elements of the Sustainable Development Model designed to subdue the United States of America. It takes our water, it takes our resources, it takes our timber, it takes our minerals, it takes our ranch lands, and it puts it in the hands of a narrowing global elite. People like, or organizations like, the Nature Conservancy and the tremendous land grabs being undertaken by state and federal governments.
Absolutely. And the more we can share that with other people, you know, you can't come across as a zealot when you talk to people that don't know about this, but you can come across as a friend and someone that is very concerned about what they're hearing and share that information with them and let the information itself demonstrate to these people what is really happening. Because you have to go, and you probably realize it yourself. The first time you were exposed to it, you went into a state of shock. Well, so are your friends and your relatives and so forth when they first hear about it. Recognize that. Let it happen. It's got to nurture there for a while, and then keep feeding them more and more information to help them to frame this understanding. Once you see taking liberty, for instance, and I'm sure it's true with many other things, once you see it, you're going to be able to see it in your newspapers, in your evening news reports, happening all around you, whereas before you never saw it because you never knew what to look for.
Well, that's right. You know, it's you never read the newspaper the same, and there's no better example than the Dow Jones Company's local newspaper, the Santa Cruz Sentinel. If you want to understand, once you know sustainable development, take a look at their stories online if you don't live in this area, and you can see how the newspaper, the New World Order, operates. Michael, I want to thank you so much for being with us on this 2 hours, and it's late back there in the East. It's still a young night here in California, but until we do this again, have a great life, and I'll look forward to seeing you in Reno, Nevada.
Thank you, Michael, myself included.
Great. Good night.
The views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Well, welcome to the second hour of tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. I'm Michael Shaw, and I'm going to be here tonight with our very special guest, Dr. Karen Efron of Minnesota. We're going to talk about the new legislation and the new committee action, congressional committee action on screening your child for mental health. Another step in the onslaught of dismantling the American family that's been going on for some time. And this is a nightmare dream that as a child I never imagined would happen in our country. The idea that the government would begin to determine who's got the right attitude and who doesn't, and that the government would take those who they think have the wrong attitude and begin to drug them. Well, that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And Dr. Karen Ephron is a pediatrician, a researcher, and a conference speaker. Her medical degree is from Johns Hopkins University, and her pediatric training is from the University of Minnesota. She's provided testimony for Congress, as well as in-depth analysis of numerous pieces of major federal education, health, and early childhood legislation for congressional staff and many organizations. She serves on the board of EdWatch, which for regular listeners to this show, Michael Chapman and Alan and Julie Quist have been guests on this show. EdWatch is leading the country in bringing to the ordinary American the truth about what's going on in our educational system. And I want to welcome you, Dr. Ephron. How are you this evening?
I'm very well, thank you, Michael. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, I'm looking forward to this very much. As you and our listeners know, we're doing a series. We're entitled "The War on Reason," and clearly the legislative efforts to begin to monitor and manipulate our children's thinking process is about the most egregious example of the war on reason. That is that we all have a duty to ourselves to protect, to respect others and their interests and their life, their liberty and their property. And certainly their children comes first. You know, we don't take as a society a person's child away and begin to screen them and manage them for their quote mental health at ages below five. But tell us about what Congress has done and what Congress is doing in this regard.
Well, actually, it started in 2002 with a presidential commission called the New Freedom Commission on Mental Health. That was a group of experts on mental health that were charged with examining and trying to fix the mental health system of the United States. And they met for a year and came out, or 2 years actually, they met for 2 years, and they came out with an initial report in 2003 and their final report in 2004. And I got a hold of it last summer along with some other people that were seeing it and really were amazed and shocked at what they were recommending.
Well, hang on for a minute. You say this is a presidential commission, so these were people appointed by George Bush.
His administration, yes.
For purposes of evaluating America's mental health system?
Correct.
That sounds like a dangerous combination right there, mental health and government. We'll be right back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. Well, we're back while some of our stations take a break for commercial sponsorship with our guest Karen Ephron, and we'll continue with this discussion. So some unelected, appointed group of people begin to evaluate the mental health condition of America and what this inside commission is going to dream up to solve a problem that certainly doesn't affect the lives of most of us in a day-to-day basis as we just proceed to carry on with our lives. But somehow I'm getting a sense that what comes out of all of this is a program that will affect all of us.
Absolutely, it will affect all of us. And when this report came out, they recommended that mental health screening was a really important thing to do. And they said consumers of all ages could benefit and that people should be screened across the lifespan. And across the lifespan and consumers of all ages were direct quotes. So they were basically saying that the entire population of the United States needed to be screened from cradle to grave.
That was the Russian idea.
Yeah, it really was. But they that was one of the things they recommend. And then the other thing they recommended was integrating that with certain treatment strategies. And one of the treatment strategies that they came up with that they held up as a model program in this report was something called the Texas Medication Algorithm Project, that was actually started in Texas while President Bush was governor, and it turns out was heavily influenced by the pharmaceutical industry. And they, instead of using tried and true drugs for psychosis and depression and bipolar disorder, for instance, they wanted to use all of the newest drugs, the ones that were still on patent, the ones that were the most profitable and the most expensive. And when one looks at those drugs, actually they don't work any better than the old ones, which didn't work that well to begin with. But these drugs also have very serious side effects, especially the antidepressants, which can cause suicide and violence. And the FDA was forced because of
studies.
Hold that
thought for just a moment, Karen. We'll be right back with our audience. Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. I'm Michael Shaw with our special guest, Dr. Karen Efron. She's been describing for us how it is that this mental health system that was envisioned by, what was it called, the Freedom Commission?
The New Freedom Commission.
Everything is new. It's the new economy, new freedom. They just take the meanings of words, turn them upside down, and put the word new in front of it and try to pretend something that isn't. So this mental health system you've described has a treatment component, and this treatment component is to replicate a Bush program when he was in Texas called the Texas Medication
Medication Algorithm Project,
right, which is a partnership between government and big pharmaceuticals with the idea that these drugs, which don't necessarily work, in fact have horrendous consequences, are imposed upon people.
Right.
As we take care of America's mental health problems.
Right. And the doctors, especially in the public mental health system, the people that are using state and federally funded programs like Medicaid would be required to use these drugs, and really wouldn't have, and according to this list and this checkoff system, and they would have to ask for waivers when they didn't want to use them.
Now, wait, when you say would have to use them, I mean, well, what does that really mean? I go into the doctor, or my father goes into the doctor, he's with Medicare, and a doctor says you're not mentally arranged, and he'd be required to drug him?
If he did label him as not mentally healthy, then he would have to use the drugs on that list. In that order.
Okay.
But he wouldn't necessarily be required to drug him.
Okay.
But still, to have drugs, you know, not only is the screening a bad idea, but then to tell doctors and to take away their clinical judgment and their discretion and say, these are the drugs you have to use, regardless of what you think of them, and if you don't want to use them, you have to beg us with, you know, a bunch of forms in triplicate to say, to tell us why. How many doctors do you think are going to do that?
I got it. Okay, well, I see that type of program working throughout the sustainable development world. In the land use context, it's, well, you're going to be in trouble unless you sign our collaborator agreement. And if you sign our collaborator agreement and you want to break from those best management practices, you'll have to beg us.
Right.
And so this is the same kind of strategic dynamic.
Exactly. Yeah. But anyway, it turns out that this nifty program wasn't saving Texas any money at all. And in fact, over 3 or 4 years, drugs, some prices of, or the dollars spent on certain drugs in the Medicaid system quadrupled. The cost of them quadrupled. And there was a TV station in Texas that did an investigative report and found out that certain drug companies that offered seed money for the research to put this plan together, for instance, Eli Lilly offered $109,000, but they reaped in Texas Medicaid expenditures over $300 million just from the sale of two drugs.
Well, that's
that they put forth.
You just call that a profit on the public-private partnership.
That's
in the course of the new world, the new economy. You know, we've got new freedom and new economy, and these are perfect applications of how they work. This, though, really isn't just a dynamic of George Bush or the Republican Party, is it?
No. And in fact, it's interesting because on the one hand you have George Bush trying to, or his administration and the drug companies trying to put forth this system and spread it to every state, either through screening or through this algorithm project, which has been exported to 12 or 15 different states already. You have that on the one hand, but you have other Republicans trying to say no to this.
Well, certainly,
and it's only the Republicans that are trying at all to say no. And even though, and it's the Democrats that are painting these Republicans that are trying to stop the screening and trying to stop coercive drugging, they're painting these Republicans as fringe kooks. So it's a really interesting dynamic because you have the big business establishment Republicans, and then you have the conservative freedom Republicans, the small minority of them, and then you have the socialist power-grabbing Democrats.
So you got quite a combination between the left-wing collectivists, the right-wing collectivists, and in between are all the rest of us Americans who just want to lead our life.
Right, exactly.
And right now, legislatively, we're not doing very well, even though we comprise 80% of the American populace. You know, if we really stop to think about it, most Americans who despise George Bush don't really like the Democrats, and most Democrats and most Republicans who despise the John Kerrys and Bill Clintons don't really like the Republican.
Right.
You know, we've all got it half right, and if we just figure out that both sides are playing to the New World Order and they're playing to the loss of genuine liberty in America, then we can figure out we just got a clean house in Congress, and almost clean all of Congress, and certainly bring the pressure to bear to impose the constitutional limitations on presidential power that are intended. Because the idea of mentally screening older people on Medicare is very bothersome, but the real story gets interesting, does it not, when we start talking about children in this context?
Absolutely it does. Texas, for instance, has over 60% of children in foster care, poor children, maybe minority children, that are receiving psychiatric drugs, and sometimes many psychiatric drugs, and starting as young as at age 3. Massachusetts has over 2/3 of their children, foster children, on psychiatric drugs. Florida has 55%, and I'm getting reports from Alabama and Mississippi of over 70% of foster children on these drugs. And let me just give you one really tragic true life story of how this screening and drugging is playing itself out. Alaya Gleason is was a 13-year-old at the time that this happened in Texas public schools. And she was a little bit mouthy, but otherwise an okay child. African American, she underwent a drug or a mental health screening at her school and was labeled. And the school psychiatrist or psychologist said that she needed to be followed up and demanded that her parents have her seen by a University of Texas psychiatrist, which they reluctantly complied with. And then a short while after that, the psychiatrist demanded that her father take her to a state mental hospital. Well, he refused.
Good for him.
But Child Protective Services took her anyway, and
wow,
took her in a police car. And she was in a state mental hospital for over 9 months, 5.5 months of which she had no contact with her family at all. She was not allowed contact with her family. She was physically restrained 26-plus times. She was treated with over a dozen different medications, forcibly and without her parents' knowledge or consent, on numerous occasions. And that is what is happening with mental health screening. There's another case in Indiana where Teen Screen, which is a mental health screening instrument developed by Columbia University, was used widespread in a school, and this one teenage girl had the screening done without her parents' knowledge or consent, and she came home with two different diagnoses because she answered two different questions out of the norm. And this one had a little bit better story. The parents were so angry that they led a rally against this type of screening instrument in the schools, and the schools stopped it. But they're also suing the school district and the psychiatric establishment that did the screening. And that is the kind of thing that needs to happen. But you know, this child was labeled as mentally ill just because of the way she answered two questions on a screening instrument, when experts like the World Health Organization, the Surgeon General, the authors of Psychiatry's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual all admit that the diagnostic criteria upon which these screening instruments are based are subjective, they're vague, they are social constructions, they are value judgments based on different cultural expectations. And those are all direct quotes from the literature.
My, well something is afoul here, and it seems to be spreading hard and fast and in so many ways. And we're going to have to, when we get back, talk about what parents should be aware of as this system begins to spread further and further into our school system. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. We're going to continue to discuss through this break that some of our stations are taking with our special guest, Dr. Karen Efron. What is it? You know, we had Kent Snyder with the Liberty Committee, Dr. Ron Paul, Congressman Ron Paul's Liberty Caucus in Congress on our show. Well, last December, and Congress had just, the lame duck Congress had just passed what was known as the Mental Health Screening Act for youngsters. Tell us a bit about how that act operates and what it does.
Well, what that bill did, it was $20 million in the enormous omnibus appropriations bill that the Congress passed in the lame duck session because they couldn't come to an agreement during the regular session. And Ron Paul bravely, courageously stood up and said, no, we should not fund this money for the grants to implement the recommendations of the New Freedom Commission, like screening and drugging, unless there is parental consent that is written, informed, and voluntary and active, as opposed to passive. You know, we'll assume that you're giving us consent unless you tell us otherwise.
You don't learn until after the fact that your child has turned violent because he's been drugged by your school system.
Exactly. So this was up for consideration in Congress. The Dr. Paul offered an amendment that said no funding unless the program requires this written and formed. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.